from Champaign Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from World Gourmet Foods, 120 Krispy Kreme Drive in Bloomington, featuring over 400 kinds of chocolates and more. Daily tasting and an extensive Saturday tasting party with over 50 items. Information at 309-663-2222 or at worldgourmetfoods.com, bringing the taste of the world to Bloomington Normal.
There's some music to get you moving on a cold winter afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our musical bridge this afternoon comes to us thanks to our guest, Dale Cockrell. We heard in the tune Money Musk. It's a tune included on the CD, The Arkansas Traveler, music from Little House on the Prairie. This is musicologist Dale Cockrell's second appearance on the program. A few weeks back, he was my guest for a shorter interview about early American music and the role it plays in Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House Stories. The time flew by, and I asked him if he wouldn't come back for a longer conversation, and he agreed. Dale Cockrell is co-producing with Butch Baldassare a series of recordings of the music cited in the Little House books. The Arkansas Traveler is the second in the series. It was preceded by Happy Land, musical tributes to Laura Ingalls Wilder. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. Join the discussion with your comments and questions. Did you or your children read the Little House books? Were you struck by how music played a role in the narrative? I hope you'll join us with a telephone call this afternoon. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-WILL. Dale Cockrell is an alumnus of the University of Illinois and currently a professor of musicology at Vanderbilt University. The CDs I mentioned are available from Paz Fiddle Recordings. Dale, welcome back.
Hi, Celeste. Great to be here.
Nice to have you in the studio.
Great to be inside.
Really. Well, tell us about that wonderful tune we opened with, Money Musk.
Well, Money Musk is like several of the tunes on The Arkansas Traveler and also on Happy Land, fiddle tunes. Laura's father was a fiddler, was an old-time fiddler. His fiddle is still extant in a museum in Missouri. And he loved, obviously, a wide range of those tunes. This is one that goes back to the 18th century. Many of them do. And is fairly characteristic of 19th century social dancing tunes. The Little House Bulks have quite a few episodes in which community dancing plays a part, and Pa plays the fiddle and mentions in their tunes like Irish Washerwoman, Money Musk, and others.
Yeah. Laura's father, Charles Philip Ingalls, did play the fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
His playing was never recorded.
That's right. He died in 1901, and of course that's well before we could have made recordings of him. Plus, he was obscure. He was out in South Dakota at that time, so we don't have recordings. Laura does describe his playing sometimes. She says, for example, that he played by ear, and that once he heard a tune, he could replicate it instantly. So it's kind of characteristic of many old-time fiddlers in that way.
You say in the notes that we might be able to kind of get a sense, and we can an approximation of his playing through the recordings of a fiddler by the name of Jep Bisbee. Who is he?
Yeah, Jep, that was an interesting story. You know, a question I think that would come to anybody's mind is, well, what did Pa sound like?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was putting together the first CD, I thought, well, maybe I can answer that on the CD by digging out the way old-time fiddlers sounded in the early years of the recording industry. And it turns out that the oldest fiddler recorded is Jep Bisbee. He was born in 1843, 8 years after Pa was born. So pretty much the same age, you would gather the same kind of style. And in one of those moments where, for historians, the skies sort of open up, it turns out he's born in the same county in upstate New York that Pa is born in. He moves west about the same time in his life. He moves to Michigan. Pa moved to Illinois, so the movements are kind of the same. He lived longer, and when he was 80 years old, Henry Ford, the industrialist who loved fiddle music, discovered this guy in Michigan, took him to his good friend Thomas Edison in New Jersey. So imagine Jep Bisbee, 80-year-old old-time fiddler, sitting there with Henry Ford in one corner, Thomas Edison in the other corner, and he says, start playing some tunes. And Jep recorded quite a few tunes that day, accompanied by his daughter. So again, the parallels are quite extraordinary in this case. And those recordings have been given to the nation. They are part of the national heritage. And so I began Happy Land with just a little bit of Jep playing so that you could fix in the mind of the listener what Pa might have sounded like.
Yeah, well, why don't we listen to that? And then why don't we go right to a more recent recording of the same tune?
Yeah.
And this is The Girl I Left Behind Me.
I heard strung out behind me. As I jogged along, my mind ran back to the gal I left behind me. The wind did blow, the rain did fall, the hail did fall and blind me. I followed that gal, a sweet little gal, a gal I left behind me. That sweet little gal, that pretty little gal, a gal I left behind me. That sweet little gal, that pretty little gal, a gal I left behind me.
Two versions there of The Girl I Left Behind Me.
Yeah. If you ask what Pa and Laura would have liked had they been alive in 2005, I think that's the music they would have liked. Coming from where they came, that's where they would have ended up. It's something in the area of bluegrass,
yeah. Yeah. And Laura might have had an iPod.
I suspect she would have.
And been well, if you're a big, you want to take your music with you. You know, in that day, you took your music with you and you took your fiddle with you.
And it was quite carefully preserved. She mentions in the book how when they moved the fiddle around through the prairie, that was the thing they took the most care with, to make sure they packaged it, because that was the thing that held the family together, at least symbolically.
Yeah, so Pa's fiddle is a symbol.
It is, indeed.
Through the books.
It is, indeed.
Yeah. How else does music work within the narratives of the stories?
Music, among other things, music closes 6 of the 8 books. But if you start looking at the way music functions in there, music always signals the beginning of the story, really. She quite commonly in her books will dedicate the first 30 pages or so to setting the scene. And then something happens, and that becomes the thing that really sets the story in motion. And in almost all of the books, that's the first moment of music. She uses music to establish when the conflict begins, when the story really begins, and then interestingly uses music to close it off at the end as well.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. When I was thinking about the interview today, I was thinking, you know, it's something we don't think of very often, but music and words so often come together mm-hmm. to tell stories.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And once you start thinking music and you start thinking sounds and you start reading the books, you can see how wonderfully musical are the books as well. The yowl of the wind, and in one of the books she talks about there was no note in the wind anymore because the blizzards had beat the family to the point that the music was out of the wind as well. So those kinds of sounds and sensitivity to the way the sounds are incorporated into the book are quite extraordinary and ubiquitous through the books.
Yeah. Apparently one of Pa's favorite tunes was the Arkansas Traveler.
That's right. That's right.
And maybe we could play at least, this is a rather long cut from the Arkansas Traveler, the CD, the Riders in the Sky performance. But it is wonderful how you see how music and story work together. Yeah. You want to say anything else about this?
Well, this version, the Arkansas Traveler can be performed any number of ways, just as a fiddle tune, for example. But when it was first published in the 1840s, it had this little skit that went along with it. And many of the jokes are still known today. I don't think they're any funnier now than they were then. But we decided to do a performance of it with the jokes kind of built into it. And the whole story hinges on the idea of fiddle tunes having a first part and a second part. And this guy who's the epitome of the Arkansas hick only knows the A part. And finally, the Arkansas Traveler comes along and teaches him the B part.
Several years ago, while exploring the state of Arkansas on horseback, a traveler came across a little log cabin in a small clearing. It stood about 15 or 20 yards from the path and was enclosed by a low rail fence of the most primitive description. In the doorway sat a man playing a fiddle, and the tune he was playing was called the Arkansas Traveler, then the most popular tune in the region. At the time the traveler reached the cabin, it was raining very hard, and he was anxious to obtain shelter from the storm. Now, the cabin did not look like much for shelter, as it was covered by clapboards, and the rain was leaking into every part of it. The old fiddler's daughter, Sarah, appeared to be getting supper, while a small boy was setting the table. Fiddler's wife, Sal, sat in the doorway near her husband, admiring the music. The traveler came on up and said,
How do you do?
And the fiddler merely glanced at him, then continued to play, saying,
I do as I please.
Well, how long you been living here?
You see that mountain there? It was there when I got here.
Can I stay here tonight?
Nope, you can't stay here.
Well, how long will it take me to get to the next house?
I don't know. Never been there.
Well, how far do you say it is to the next house?
I reckon it's upwards of some distance.
How can I cross this river ahead?
The ducks and geese all swim across.
Well, how far is it to the forks of the path?
Been living here now and forever. Ain't seen no path forked yet.
Give me some satisfaction, if you please, sir. Where does this path go?
Never been anywhere since I lived here. It's always there in the morning when I get up.
Say, why don't you fix your roof and stop the leaks?
Cause it's raining. I'd get wet.
Well, then why don't you fix it when it's not raining?
Don't leak then.
Why are you playing that tune over and over?
I'm afraid I'll forget it.
Well, why don't you play the second part of it?
I've known this tune for 10 years. It ain't got no second part.
Give me the fiddle.
Thank goodness for the traveler.
You're ready for the B part by that
yeah,
time, aren't
you? Yeah, you sure are. Writers in the Sky, I imagine these guys had a wonderful time doing that.
Oh, they had a blast doing this. We had to edit out all of the animal sounds. We left some in there. They got into making the animal sounds, and the track was just filled with them. So,
what would you like to tell us about your co-producer and the other artists, all the artists that have worked on this project?
Yeah. Well, Butch I've known for some time. Butch is a mandolinist well known to bluegrass aficionados. And Butch is a colleague of mine at the Blair School of Music. And I'd liked Butch's music. I thought the kind of music that he produced was sympathetic to this. In addition, he's got a young son, and I have found that people understand this project better if they have children. So Butch and I told him about the project. He thought it was a great idea, and we've made a pretty good team. He's really good with the instrumentalist, and I was a former singer. I work with the singers, so when we go in the studio, we kind of divide the work up that way. The musicians, Nashville is just an extraordinary place. I was talking to one of the accordionists on this recording, and I asked Jeff, I said, "Where are you from, Jeff?" And he said, "Well, I'm from upstate New York." I said, "Well, you're a long way from home. Do you like it down here?" And he said, "Oh, I love it in Nashville." He said, the best musician in every town in America moved here. And so I never go a week without learning something that I didn't learn before. Mm-hmm. So one of the really extraordinary things about making these recordings has been to come to know this incredible depth of musicians that are out there ready to play.
Yeah, well, I guess we lost one of our best musicians from Urbana to Nashville, didn't
That's
we?
That's right. That's right. She's a star.
Andrea Zahn.
Mm-hmm.
And she is here in a wonderful hymn.
Yeah.
Sweet by and by. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to it.
There's a land that is fairer than day, and by faith we may see it afar. For the Father waits over the way to prepare us a dwelling place there in the sweet by and by. We shall meet on that beautiful shore in the sweet by and by. We shall sing on that beautiful shore the melodious songs of the blessed, and our spirits shall sorrow no more, not a sigh for the blessing of rest in the sweet.
Show me.
thanks for sending Andrea our way.
Yeah. Darn. I wonder if she ever gets back home.
She does. She does. Actually, her family moved down there as well. But she maintains close connection with here and performs quite often in Urbana, I think.
Yeah. So far, we've heard some music for dancing.
Mm-hmm.
We heard the hymn, Sweet By and By. Music with a comic skit mm-hmm. embedded in it. What other musical genres are referenced in the Little House stories?
Oh, gee, I'd have to dig out the list. It's so extensive. I really like to say that American vernacular music, the whole span of it, is referenced in the books. Any genre, subgenre you want to mention, from African-American spirituals to Scottish songs to hymns to fiddle tunes to parlor songs, can all be found in there to some degree or another. So just about everything you want to hear is here. I sometimes say that these books represent the playlist of first century America. I mean, if you want to know what the songs were that we're listening to, here they are. They're embedded in these books.
Yeah. Laura Ingalls Wilder must have been very aware of that when she wrote these books.
Yeah, she was. I think she stumbled on the idea initially of incorporating the music into it, but quickly saw that the references to the music added emotional depth and dimensionality to her narratives and to her story. At least did for her, and she hoped that that was also the case for her listeners, her readers, and then systematically made sure that music was an integral part of each one of the books.
Yeah. Did she say why she began writing these books?
Well, she began writing them simply as a memoir, and she wrote a memoir when she was in her 50s that's never been published, called Pioneer Girl, and that's the source, the kind of wellspring for all of these. Her daughter was a professional writer
mm-hmm.
and quite well known and highly regarded in her day. And I'm sure that her daughter encouraged her to start writing these books. She made money, incidental money, writing columns and farm journals. So encouraged her to take this memoir and see what she could do with it. Then the daughter took it and edited it. They proposed it eventually to Harper and Row, who accepted it. And it's a kind of a little-known fact, but HarperCollins, the giant publishing company today, to a large extent owes its existence to Laura Ingalls Wilder, because the first book, The Little House in the Big Woods, was published in 1932, right at the depth of the Depression, and sold so well that it really floated the whole company there for two or three years. So
that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, Laura was born in 1867, and she died in 1957. Mm-hmm. All the change she saw in her lifetime.
Yeah. And it's amazing, too, that she's writing these books in her 70s, really. So she was well up in there before she became a writer and established a reputation by any means.
Yeah. You became familiar with the stories and the music in them when you read the books aloud to your son, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Were you immediately struck by the musical references in the book?
Well, I'd not read the books as you know, in those days we didn't, and I was a guy and they were girls' books. We didn't tell Sam they were girls' books, so we started reading them. And I started off and I went, well, it's interesting, there's a lot of music here, and so I would sing the tunes I knew, and then started having to make up tunes and had to start making up a lot of tunes. And it was about that time that it kind of came down on me that there's a lot of music in these books, and if we're looking for an ethnography of the way music functioned in a 19th-century frontier family, there's no better treasure than these books for understanding that.
Well, thank you to you and your son, Sam.
Yeah, good for Sam, huh?
Right.
Punk now, but, you know, well.
When did you begin to think you'd like to catalog the music and then make it available on CD?
Well, first I sat down and did a rough index just to find out what the music was, how much was in there. Discovered there were 120 songs, and kind of stored it away in the back, going, there's something there, there's a project there. After a couple of years, it dawned on me that we really need recordings, and then I thought, well, Nashville's the place to make it. Started talking to Butch. One thing kind of led to another, and then that led to the scholarly work that I'm doing on it now. What I'm doing now is pulling all 125 extant songs together, editing them in a scholarly fashion, and they'll be published as part of a 40-volume set that's supposed to represent the breadth and the depth of American music. So this will be the representation of family music making, how families engaged music.
Very interesting. Our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine is musicologist Dale Cockrell. A few weeks back, he was my guest for a shorter interview about early American music and the role it plays in Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House stories. And that time just flew by, and we didn't get to play very much music. So I asked him if he wouldn't mind coming back for a longer conversation, and that's why he's here today. And the music that we're listening to this afternoon comes from two CDs, The Arkansas Traveler, music from Little House on the Prairie, and Happy Land, musical tributes to Laura Ingalls Wilder. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a question or a comment. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Let's talk to a listener, someone calling in from Urbana this afternoon on line one. Hi.
Well, hello. Dale Cockrell. I'm looking at my Edison recording of McDonald's Reel by Jasper Bisbee and Beulah Bisbee on the piano. Now, what we're doing now, what is the difference between Jeff and Jasper, or was that, or was Jeff his nickname?
Yeah, Jeff was his nickname, so Jasper is the same guy.
Okay, very good. He's excellent. Now, what we're dealing with here is New England contra dance music. And contra, of course, is country, English country dancing, but contra, of course, is the English, or the really the New Englandese pronunciation of country.
Mm-hmm.
Or would you not agree?
I would agree, yeah.
All right. And it's extremely good. Now, frankly, Andrea Zahn couldn't carry Jasper Bisbee's fiddle case, if you ask me. So we have, at least on my recording, we have opera reels with calls and McDonald's reel, or Lord McDonald's reel, and which is also known as Hop High Ladies, I believe. But, yeah, you might take up the contra dance question. And thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're an expert here, so I've got a question for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shoot.
Do you know a tune called Red Heifer?
Red Heifer?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't, actually.
I was afraid you'd say that. It's the one tune of the 126. Laura mentions that her father played a tune called Red Heifer. And it's the one of the 126 that I've never been able to find, so I thought I would throw that at you. There's a fiddle tune called Red Steer and another one called Yellow Heifer, but there's no Red Heifer as far as I know. So see if you can find it and give me a call.
Well, I'll talk to some of my fiddler friends here, and we'll see what we can come up with.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Very good. Next, we talk with a listener on line four in Oak Forest. Hi.
Hi, this brings back such nice memories. My daughters are 40 and 37. They both loved the Little House on the Prairie books, but my oldest daughter loved them so much that she read the series five times. I just went and looked on the shelf. I still have both of their boxed series, and I'm going to get the one out for my granddaughter now, and I would like to buy the CDs to go with it. How can I order your CD?
Well, it sounds like that's a ready-made question. I appreciate that. they're actually widely available. You should be able to get them at Barnes & Noble, at Borders, order them from Amazon, or the website is www.pawsfiddle.com.
Pawse, did you say? I'm sorry.
Pawse, as in paw, grandpa, you know, paw, paw Ingalls.
Oh, okay.
Pawse, P-A-S-F-I-D-D-L-E.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm really enjoying this, and it's bringing back such sweet memories.
Oh, well,
and, you know, my girls were young during the bicentennial, and everybody wore Little House on the Prairie dresses and the bonnets and the whole deal. And we had many happy memories of those times.
Great.
So thank you.
Thanks for your story.
Thanks for giving us a call this afternoon. It's very interesting. I have never read one of these books, but you know what? This music is leading me.
To the
stories.
Well, I've had that experience with children, too, of people buying the records for the children, and then the children sit down and read the books all the way through. So it's interesting. The music often will take you into the stories.
Mm. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I'm really looking forward to getting the CD. I always felt frustrated reading the books because I didn't know what the tunes were.
Yep. Yep.
But I had no idea there were that many.
Yeah.
I've read the whole series a couple of times. I read the first one as a child, and then my aunt gave me On the Shores of Silver Lake. She gave me the little house in the big woods. And that was like the fourth or fifth book, and I didn't want to read it. And then I never got it from the library. And I ended up reading it right after college.
Mm-hmm.
I got the whole set, and I sat down, and I read book one over, and I read them all through. I thought it was a very interesting case study of raising a family of all girls in the 19th century.
Yeah.
And how Laura has kind of the role of the boy. And she's, you know, she does all this stuff with Pa, but she's always being pulled back to be a proper lady with Ma.
That's right.
So she's in kind of a, you know, Mary's clearly the lady.
Yeah.
But I have a question. When you asked that other caller about a song, there's a song I've been trying to find for 50, 55 years. It's called Sweet Violet. Do you know it?
Sweet Violet?
Yeah.
You know, I know that name.
There once was a farmer who took a young miss in back of the barn where he gave her a lecture on horses and chickens and eggs and so on.
You know, I bet I can find that. If you'll drop me an email at Vanderbilt, I can find that for you.
So what's your email?
Dale, D-A-L-E dot Cockrell, C-O-C-K-R-E-L-L, at vanderbilt.edu. My wife is also the archivist at the Center for Popular Music, so between the two of us, we'll get it for you.
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay.
And thanks for spelling your name. I wish, Celeste, that you would always spell your guest's last name.
Okay.
Even when they, unless they're Smith or Jones.
Jones or something? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Right. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions, comments are invited, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I'm going to write that suggestion down here. It strikes me, looking at the tunes that are on these two CDs, that there's some very old music, and then there's music that would be contemporary to Pa. Barbara Allen would be a very, very, very old song from England. And then we have Old Dan Tucker, which would have been
more or less contemporary.
An American tune.
Yeah.
A tune like Old Dan Tucker, how was it distributed?
Well, Old Dan Tucker, like quite a few. Maybe I need to back up just a moment and say that the Arkansas Traveler, that CD is of all 18 songs that are embedded in Little House on the Prairie, the book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's circumscribed. The tunes are in the book, and that's what they are. It's interesting how many of those tunes, and really how many tunes in the whole series, are tunes that we would say were from the minstrel show, from the stage. It's clear that Pa loved the stage. He went every chance he could get. He loved the musical stage. Went every chance that he could get, and many of the tunes that he loved the best and that he passed on came from the music theater, and particularly from the minstrel show. It was so endemic to 19th century America. There's actually a scene in one of the books in which Pa is involved in a blackface minstrel show in South Dakota. As abhorrent as that is to us today, it did pass on some wonderful music to us. I mean, primarily among that, I think the tunes of Stephen Foster. But Old Dan Tucker was one of the first of the great hits of the minstrel show stage. So,
very interesting. So when did sheet music really arrive and spread?
Yeah, well, it's right during this time as well. It's in the 1840s that the technology gets to the point that sheet music can be widely distributed. Then we have a genius like Stephen Foster who comes along with O Susanna, 1848. And for the first time, one piece of sheet music is selling tens of thousands of copies. So it's the same kind of thing that happens with Uncle Tom's Cabin in 1852. Technology, an audience is all at once there, and the genres simply explode in popularity. So that by the 1870s and the 1880s, Mary and Laura are reading from sheet music in South Dakota. There's one place in one of the books where she talks about a singing school, and it's clear learning to sing from a book. It was brought out from Chicago. It was quite commonly available and widely available.
Hmm. Yeah. In our music collection at home, we have CDs now from a couple of films that we really enjoyed where the music plays a very important role, Songcatcher and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou.
Yeah.
Do you sense an interest or a growing interest in, I will use, you know, quotes here, historical, traditional music?
No question about it. And in some ways, the style that we adopt in this book follows from just what you say. My son, Sam, when he was about 9 years old, hooked on to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the soundtrack, and would not quit playing it. And it struck me at that time, well, you know, this is grown-up music, and yet this nine-year-old can listen to it. So when we put these CDs together, we didn't dumb them down. We figured that children of 7 or 8 years old were fully sophisticated enough to understand what's happening with the music, and that's proved to be the case. But I don't think there's any question that people are interested in American music and old American music in ways that they weren't before. In part, I think universities are responsible because now there are scholars of American music that there weren't 20 or 30 years ago. It was a field that was so marginal that no self-respecting scholar would get a PhD in that because there were no self-respecting jobs.
Mm.
Now there are, and so there's a rising interest among young people and middle-aged people in this legacy.
Yeah, I think you talked about this a little bit earlier on, but maybe you could expand on it. The reinterpretation of this music, or contemporary interpretation. Why did you decide to do it that way?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Behind all of it is a belief, in part it's a scholarly belief, but a belief that vernacular music doesn't exist in a score, unlike classical music. A sonata by Beethoven is to be played these notes, and it's to be played this way. A song by Stephen Foster is published in sheet music, and you can look at it and go, oh, I'm supposed to play the notes exactly this way. But Stephen Foster didn't expect you were. He expected that Pa would get his fiddle, and he'd play the notes that he could play, and a piano player would play it another way, and somebody on the minstrel stage would sing it yet another way. And so the philosophy, the motto, which we used in the studio quite often, was we're going to take these old American songs and we're going to make them new. What you heard earlier, the segue from Jasper Bisbee into The Girl I Left Behind Me, is supposed to play that up, that here's the old, let's take it, make it new. What would it sound like here? So every time we went in the studio, we gave them the sheet music, we gave them 19th century sheet music, gave the performers that, we talked about the context, and now said, make it meaningful to you in 2005, 2006, in the belief that if they make it meaningful, then it'll be meaningful to audiences.
Yeah. Back to Sam. What do you think he enjoyed most about the stories?
Well, Sam loved the characterization. I mean, the stories are so rich in character. I think one of the things that appeals to me, and I'd like to think it appealed to him, was that these aren't superheroes. These are people who lived real lives, and one of the interesting things about the Little House books is that, by and large, they don't win. They're books of conflict. They're often books of tragedy. They're books of loss. And in that way, they engage us in a real and kind of fundamental way. We were talking earlier before the show about my son breaking down in tears at the first time at when Jack the Brindle Dog dies. And that was his first engagement with death, you know, the representation of death. But as an 8 year old, that was his way of dealing with it. He broke down in tears. He didn't want the dog to die. The books are filled with those kinds of moments.
So it's real.
It's real. It's real.
Life can be difficult and dangerous.
These aren't lacquered lives. These are real, honest, hard, rough lives.
Yeah, very good. I want to wrap up this afternoon with the bonus track on the Arkansas Traveler. But before I do that, is there anything else you want to be sure we talk about here this afternoon before we have to call it a day?
Word about the bonus track?
Okay.
You want to? Okay, the bonus track. The bonus track is substantially different in style from the rest of it, but I see it as my responsibility also to do some of what Charles Ives called ear stretching. And I put this piece on there. I mean, I like it. It's not really a song. It's kind of in another world between these things, but also in the belief that the kids would listen to it, would like it, and would educate their parents, who would go, isn't that fun? And the parents who might, first of all, go, oh, that's not music, would be educated by the children and the joy of it.
Yeah. Now, I understand that among the voices we're going to hear in this ear-stretching exercise belongs to Bronwyn Redvers Lee and her mother. Bronwyn is a third-grade student at Leal School in Urbana.
That's
She's
right.
still here.
That's right.
Her mother, Elizabeth Boyd, is a postdoctoral fellow and visiting professor of history here at the U of I.
Yeah.
So this is what we're going to hear is the bonus track, and it is a, it's also, I think, the way it's described on in the notes is a fantasy.
Yeah.
On, do you want to say anything more?
It's composed by Stan Link, too, who was at the University of Illinois as a faculty for a couple of years, too.
Okay, here we go. With that, we put the lid on the pot. A fantasy on peas porridge hot. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Next time you're in town, come back.
I will.
Very good. Dale Cockrell has been my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine, our guest, and his name is spelled C-O-C-K-R-E-L-L. And if you're interested in the recordings that we talked about today, Happy Land Musical Tributes to Laura Ingalls Wilder, or the Arkansas Traveler music from Little House on the Prairie. Just put Pa's Fiddle into your browser, and there you will be. And also, these are widely available in your favorite bookstore, your favorite music seller. There we go. Dale Cockrell is an alumnus of the University of Illinois, currently a professor of musicology at Vanderbilt University. And the CDs, they are available from Pa's Fiddle Recordings. That's the label. And there we will leave it. One note here. I've been told now that Sweet Violets was performed this summer in Champaign-Urbana by a group of the chorale, the local group. And so if you want to go to www.thechorale.org, they might be able to help folks out as well.
Good. Good.
Very good.
Good.
Okay. Very good. Dale, thank you again.
Thank you, Celeste.
Dale Cockrell, our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, let's find out what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade, also at the Kansas City Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. We'll start out in Kansas City with the hard red winter wheat. The March contract there up 9 cents today, $4.90 the settlement price. The May contract at $5 even. May wheat in Kansas City at $5 even. In Springfield, rather, in Chicago, wheat settled like this. Kansas. The March contract, a 456 high price, low at 447 and three quarters. Settlement price at 453 and three quarters. And they were up 2 1/4 today at that for the soft red winter wheat in Chicago. May futures, a 470 top, low at 61.5. Settlement price at 67 and three quarters, up 2.5. And July futures were up 3 cents, 478 1/4 the settlement price, the high at 80 1/4, the low at 72. September futures, 487 3/4 the high, the low at 82. Settlement price at $4.86, up 2.5 cents. In December contract in the wheat pit, 3.5 cents higher today, 499. The high price, the low at 92. Settlement price up 3.5 for the December wheat. They were at 497.5 on their settlement price for the day. March corn futures now 412 3/4 the top, the low at 404 3/4. Settlement price at 407.5, down 0.75 cents. And the May at 424 3/4 high, low at 17 1/4. Settlement price at $4.20 even. They were down 0.75 cents a bushel for the May contract in the corn pit. July futures, 433 3/4 the high, the low at 26. The settlement price at 428.5. They were off 1/4 today. And the September's range from a top of 417 to a bottom at 412 1/4. Their settlement price at $4.15 a bushel, up 2.5 cents for the SEP corn. December contract, your new crop, 406 the high, the low at $4.25. Settlement price at 404.5. They were up 3 1/4. In the March contract, a 412 top, low at 407. Settlement price there at 411 1/4, up 4 cents. May futures were up 3.5 at 413.5 with a high of 15 and a low at 13. And July 2008 corn, a 420 top, low at 13 3/4. Settlement price at 417 1/4. They were up 3 1/4 on the afternoon. March oats today, 237.5. The settlement price down 3 1/4. The May futures were off 2 1/4 at 246 1/4. From the soy complex, nearby March beans, $7.59.5 the high, the low at 751 1/4. Settlement price at 758 3/4. They were up 8 1/4. May futures, 775.5 the high, the low at